The Blue Room on Radio City Talk.
Welcome to The Blue Room on Radio City Talk with me, Peter McParland. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Paddy Boylan, Matt Jones and Simon Magnet. Si, it's good to have you here, mate. It's good that we infused a bit of good looks into the show for once. I mean, no one can see you at home, obviously, but, you know, it's good to have you here.
Cheers, appreciate being back. It's the first time we've done this together on The Blue Room.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, mate.
So you give a compliment and then...
I know,
you
that's just away. Me all over, mate. Yeah. That's just me. Si, you are part of the Everton Supporters Trust.
Yes.
Doing some tremendous work at the moment.
Thank you.
With the food banks and collecting cards...
Yeah,
for the
Bradley Lowry,
young gentleman in Sunderland. Just tell us a little bit about that.
It was one of his Christmas wishes. He wanted as many Christmas cards as possible because obviously he had a bit of bad news a couple of weeks ago, which doesn't look good for him. But we've managed to pull a few strings with a couple of our members and who've decided to deliver some cards on our behalf, on Evertonians' behalf. So we're collecting them at our food bank collection points at St Luke's Church, at the Fan Zone and at the Winslow Hotel, and we're collecting them all together and we'll be sending them up en masse after the derby.
Will that still be happening on Monday night?
On Monday night, yeah, we'll be doing the same on Monday night.
Brilliant stuff.
We'll also have some blank cards in St Luke's for people to come in and sign if they haven't got any spare ones. So feel free to come in and see us and sign a card and make a young lad's Christmas wish come true.
Fantastic. I've seen Everton and all the right today as well doing their bit, and it's that time of year as well, and then, you know, it's all going on. It's great to see. But, you know, on the pitch, thankfully, touch wood very loudly, things might just be starting to happen. Well, you know, everything we've been calling for, Matt, in the last few weeks, you know, seem to have clicked, hopefully, finally, last night against Arsenal.
Are you getting your hopes up before a derby here, Pad?
No.
That's dangerous.
No,
yeah.
I'm not getting my hopes, not even talking about the derby.
No, it's been such a mad 4 days, because I came out to Vicarage Road on Saturday feeling so disillusioned with the team and the way they played. The lack of fight, the lack of spirit, the lack of any kind of pattern of play was just... It was really demoralising, and it left me really disinterested in Everton on that way home. But and then going to the game tomorrow, it felt like a bit of a chore, really, going up to Goodison Park. And, you know, you look at Arsenal's team, you look at the team Everton put out, and it just felt as if we were on a hiding to nothing. So to see the players, you know, go 1-0 down and then turn in that kind of performance, and to see the fans as well, you know, unite behind that kind of display. To get behind the players and then for that kind of performance to come in the last hour of the game was just so unexpected, but so refreshing as well. And like you said, hopefully now that for Ronald Koeman, for a lot of these players, something's clicked and they realise that's how you get the best out of Goodison Park. That's how an Everton team should play. And if you do play like that, you do work hard and you do work as a team, you can get results against anyone. Because, you know, let's not forget, Arsenal haven't lost an away game since March. They haven't lost a game in the Premier League this season since the opening day. So that was a massive win against a really top-class opposition. And all of a sudden, like you said, you're feeling a little bit better about things, aren't you?
It feels like a bit of a watershed moment in Everton's season. Hopefully it is, at least. And an unexpected one at that, because, as Matt already said, the performance on Saturday against Watford really wasn't anything to write home about. And if you'd asked me after that game whether we'd get a result against high-flying Arsenal, I probably wouldn't have put too much money.
Game, high-flying Arsenal.
Yeah, well, we can go with that hyphen if you want.
It's gone from Woolwich to Arsenal. Woolwich Arsenal to Arsenal to high-flying Arsenal.
Yeah, we can go with that if you want. But they came into the game themselves in a really good run of form. They hadn't been beaten, I believe, away in the league since March. So for Everton to put that run to an end and do it with that kind of performance, it felt kind of catalytic, if you like. I think Koeman has started, it seems, to have learned a few lessons in terms of what's been going wrong. He's looked at the last 20 against Man United and Watford playing under Valencia, and he's just started from that. We've gone back to basics and given that extra support to Rom. It just seemed to spark something in Everton, seemed to spark something in the crowd as well. And Goodison's a really difficult place to play, isn't it, when the crowd's up for the game like that. And that's Everton used that to their advantage.
I don't know. I don't know why everyone's so surprised. To be honest with you,
because we watched.
Have you watched us this year?
No, I mean, everyone's quoting stats about you know, Arsenal not winning an away, not losing an away game since March. Last night, where Everton played Arsenal, every time Everton have played Arsenal on a Tuesday night, we've always won. So it was written in the cards.
Yeah. Why were we even worried?
But I also seen this stat saying Arsenal haven't lost on a Tuesday night in the league since 2005. So, you know, we put that one to bed as well. Stat busters.
Was that
yeah.
only their second away defeat for the entire calendar year?
I think it was something like that. Yeah.
It's not just saying they've been unbeaten this season. It's, you know, practically the whole year. And I mean, it's weird, isn't it? Because Koeman's actually come out and said about the first 20 minutes how bad it was. You know, he pretty much said it was absolutely shocking. And then for the response, and it was weird, the response, because it was only like small things. It wasn't big things. It wasn't like a big change. It was little things that started developing. And, you know, as you mentioned there, Paddy, Enner Valencia, I thought, was the catalyst last night. Just... He shamed a few people, which is what we've been calling for in the last few weeks. He shamed a few people by just putting in the legwork that others weren't. And then the knock-on effect moved on to Romelu Lukaku, then moved on to Ross Barkley, James McCarthy. Obviously, Garner Gay does it anyway.
Yeah.
And it just sort of spread through the team. And soon as a couple of tackles went in, then the crowd lifted. And suddenly it felt like the old Goodison again, and it felt like the old Everton again. And it's funny how those things can switch very, very quickly. And it wasn't a Neville tackle on Ronaldo. It was just a little thing that the players just switched on. And let's hope it continues. Let's really hope it continues, because the difference last night was a little bit of hard work. All it was. It was a little bit of hard work from a bad performance to suddenly being a very, very good performance, and something that inspired the fans to lift the ground. And afterwards, all you could hear was plaudits about Goodison Park, whether it be from Henry Winter, Howard Webb was talking about it, Steve McManaman. Everyone was raving about Goodison Park, and we think, well, hang on, we haven't seen this Goodison Park for a while. Yeah. And the whole thing was just... Well timed.
It just goes to show that, doesn't it? You know, the atmosphere has been criticised a lot as of late, and I think a lot of that we've said that, you know, on the show for the past couple of years has been down to the style of football and how, you know, how slow it is, how it doesn't really suit the Everton mantras. And we were talking before the show about how what do our fans prefer, that kind of dogs of war attitude or the school of science. And I think a lot of our generation has been brought up on that, you know, thrust football, getting at the opposition, you know, being quite direct at times when you need to be and getting people behind you. And that, there's a sequence, wasn't there, in the first half, which I think was a catalyst for the atmosphere change. I think Ross Barkley won a crunching tackle. Baines went in and then McCarthy went in as well. And Aaron Lennon kind of scampered free, didn't he, down the left-hand side. And after that, everyone was up, and he just kind of built and built and built from that point on. And you could feel it. I've not had that feeling at Goodison Park for a while where... It seems as though there's an inevitability about Everton scoring. But before the half-time break, it just felt as if we were gathering momentum, we were finding our feet in the game, and it was all, everything aligned perfectly. And when Seamus Coleman did eventually equalise, it felt inevitable. And then again in the second half, and it was a similar story, really. They started off pretty well, but we got into it, you know, roughed them up a little bit, and again, built momentum. Everything kind of aligned in that second period. And I wasn't surprised when we scored the winner. So it was great to see everything come together like that. And it's been a while since we've had that kind of huge moment, you know, at the Gladys Street end, late on in the game against a big team. And like Paddy said, hopefully that's going to be the catalyst now for going forward, because we have got, you know, a lot more big games to come in this spell.
You mentioned a couple of names there of players that I personally think had really, you know, good individual performances there. And something that we haven't been able to say for the majority of the season so far, I think Barkley played really well. I think James McCarthy was fantastic yesterday. Yeah. I thought he'd done a really good job marshalling that midfield. And and Ped, you're right about Enner Valencia. I think the way we set up with one up top and playing sort of two defensive midfielders gives a lot of reliance on your wings, your wide men. And We just haven't seen that direct style, like, you know, getting down the wings, putting pressure on the fullbacks, and allowing that space for Lukaku to get into and other attacking players. And Valencia did provide that, I think, for us last night, and so did Lennon, to be fair to him. And hopefully going into the derby on Monday, hopefully that's emulated.
But it's funny, last season Ron Koeman went on a long Barham run at Southampton as well, and it was Shane Long coming into the side that kick-started that run. He started scoring goals. I think Pella was out injured, and he got into the team, got a really good run, and it wasn't just his running, but obviously his goals he was scoring, and that kick-started them. And I just think he's the player we've been crying out for. For me, in the summer, I would have gone for Shane Long. I think he's the kind of player we need a runner. I know it's an old-fashioned kind of thing, but we need a runner in the team. We need someone who'll do that hard work. Just to, we've been critical in a way of Romelu Lukaku in the last few weeks. There's sort of two sides to it, isn't there? There's people that say he should work harder, and then there's people who say, well, if he's not going to work harder or do that job, then you have to put someone alongside him. And I think last night the penny finally dropped. The last three games he's come on, he's had good games, Valencia. And I just thought, yes, he started the game slow last night, trying to find his position and what his role was. But he was so much more effective than what we've seen out of Morales and what we've seen out of Delafeu. Delafeu and Morales are old-fashioned wingers in a way. Whereas if you're going to play that three up front, you need people who are going to hassle and harass and press. And that's what he did last night. And it was great because actually as the game went on, you started seeing a little bit more of his game. He's fantastic in the air.
Yeah, he's great.
His leap is absolutely superb. And the amount of times he won the ball, or he went up for a ball and didn't cleanly win it, but it stopped the centre-back from getting it. And suddenly it's panic stations. The ball's at the feet. We're nipping in and getting it. And for me, you've got to leave him in there. He's got to give him a run. Otherwise, you know, who else is there? We go back round the circle again. For me, he did his job perfectly.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. And one of my frustrations over the last couple of weeks is that, in my opinion, Koeman hasn't had a settled 11.
Yeah,
he doesn't know
it. Decisive.
And that's been a massive contribution in my opinion to our poor performances. Mm. So yeah, I'm all for giving the lad a run out.
I think you'd argue, wouldn't you, that the 11 that started the game, with the exception of Jagielka, obviously, who's suspended, should also start the derby. They're all worthy of keeping the shirts in. And for me as well, that means that Gareth Barry is left out. And arguably, before the game, we'd have said Gareth Barry is essential to everything that's good about Everton in the midfield. But that performance and the balance in the midfield in particular, it was more of a 4-1-4-1, if you like. And you had Idrissa Gueye as the deepest holder midfielder. James McCarthy was just given license to get in the opposition's faces, and he was brilliant at doing that, wasn't he?
Harassed and harangued. Barkley was doing McCarthy's job. McCarthy was doing his job, and it was dead weird.
I kept getting them mixed up last night from far away when we were in the other half. But
I've asked for ages for Barkley to be played deeper because I don't think he can do that number 10 role.
Well, let me ask you this question then. I know Barry, for the last, for the whole time he's been at Everton, it's been fantastic. The last few games, he has started to look a little bit jaded. You know, far too much football. He was left out last night completely. Don't know whether there's an injury. It was just to rest him. How much now do we look at it and think, well, maybe actually the fact that he doesn't have the legs and he can't do the pressing, maybe we've just found something last night, that those three players or a combination of them or new players who come in, that might be our midfield, and we might start looking away from Barry, because maybe it's a case that Barry slows everything down or isn't pressing. And if you want what we've been talking about the last few weeks, a flat three in midfield that all they do is get in people's faces, maybe Barry is not the player to do that, and maybe we just need players in there with energy and legs and who can get round the pitch and affect things.
I think the main issue with that is whenever Barry's been suspended or he's been injured and he hasn't played, we've been really poor, haven't we? You think back to that Swansea game.
We haven't really played a flat three.
No, but against Swansea we did, didn't we? That it was the same midfield three that made up that game. We had McCarthy next to Garner and Ross in front of them, and it just didn't work at all. And I think back to times last season when it was Besic and McCarthy actually against Arsenal when Barry was suspended as well, and the team just looked rudderless in midfield without him. So I think that in itself has always meant that he's come back into the side. But like you said, that formula and not the key thing for me last night was there's no passengers in the team. You know, I looked at the 11 at Watford on Saturday, and you immediately think Delafeu's not going to work hard enough, Morales isn't going to work hard enough, and then by default Lukaku's going to be a passenger up there as well, because he's not going to press on his own. So But last night you had Valencia working hard, you had Lennon getting up and down the line, stopping Bellerin, Lukaku did his job, and then immediately Ross Barkley sees those in front of him, works a bit harder, and then you've got that solid base behind you. But I think it's always going to be the case where we have to start phasing Gareth Barry out. And you know, as good as a player he's been for us, if Koeman wants to play this, you know, aggressive pressing style, those midfielders we've got are more suitable. But I still think he can be a valuable asset. You know, I mean, coming off the bench, you know, in a game, you know, a game like that at the end, when we did lose control a little bit, then we went 1-0 up. Imagine bringing a player on like him who can just get his foot on the ball, play clever passes, slow things down a little bit. He can be an asset to us still, but whether he should be a guaranteed starter anymore is debatable after last night.
I mean, to be honest with Barry, when he first came in, I don't think anyone really expected him to be there longer than 12 months. I think it was a stopgap, wasn't it, to the MLS. And it's just the fact that he became an integral part of the squad there in the first season. And it's gone over and over, and obviously he's into what, his third or fourth year now with us. Yeah, I think Paddy hit the nail on the head before as well when he said, you know, that's a winning starting 11 there. And you've got a starter, you've got to go with it.
We've got to stop tinkering with the team, to be fair, because I thought again, changing the centre-back partnership, I didn't think that helped in the first 20 minutes. There was you've seen from their goal anyway, you know, that sort of sixes and sevens at the back again, people not sure what they were doing. But once everyone's settled down, the irony is we've got to change the centre-back partnership again. So, listen, we've come to the end of the first part of the show. Plenty more coming up in part two. We'll continue talking about this game. And also plenty of names doing the rounds, possible signings for January. We'll be right back on the Blue Room.
This is the Blue Room. Radio City Talk.
Welcome back to the Blue Room on Radio City Talk with me, Peter McPartland. We have been talking about Everton 2, Arsenal 1. We will continue because we're just all happy at the end of the day, aren't we? We've been talking about absolute horror shows for the last week. We're conveniently glossing over the Watford defeat, which is quite easy to do as well. But, I mean, we'll go back to that. I mean, the difference between the two performances, again, as we say, it's just energy, wasn't it? You know, you touched on it there, Matt, no passengers. You know, the amount of people on Saturday, the amount of static bodies when Watford had the ball or when we had the ball. But last night, there was so much energy all the time, you know, players moving into space. And again, I'll go back to Valencia. The fact that he was always available off the wing, you know, coming in the inside, creating space for Lukaku so Lukaku could move out to the centre. Because at times, Lukaku, for me, he was going wide. It was almost like, there's times when you're thinking, it was like a couple of years ago when we beat them 3-0 and Lukaku played wide against the fullback and Naismith played as a false nine, and there was a bit of that going on last night. And again, that's another thing that we can take from having an extra body up front, is that Romelu Lukaku can start moving around now, because we know he's not a traditional centre-forward. We know he likes moving around, he likes finding the space. If Valencia's in there, that's another thing he can start doing.
I was asked on a show on Monday night what Everton do well, and I was trying to brainstorm this, if this was after Watford, bear in mind, and the only thing I could come up with was that they had in Lukaku a striker that would probably score you 20 goals a season. And the point I made back then was basically that everything up to now needs to go on getting the best out of Lukaku. And you'd argue that, as Aruna Kone did in spells last season, I'm thinking about the Sunderland game in particular, Valencia last night helped rouse something, didn't he, in Rom. And the balance just seemed so much better. It was kind of what I expected from Ronald Koeman's Everton.
Yeah.
When Koeman joined, it was as Southampton did last season. They harassed the opposition. They got in the faces. It was full of energy and tempo. And that does, as we've already said, that brings the best out of Goodison. So now let's see that template expanded upon, and let's have, over the course of the next three or four games, a settled team, with the exception, obviously, of Jagielka coming out for Mario or Holgate.
I mean, it isn't rocket science, is it? Well, I mean, when you talk about Premier League football, I suppose it is harder than what it looks. But, I mean, Lukaku there, you said, you know, he's potentially a 20-goal-a-season goal scorer. I think he's got 9 goals in 12 games so far this season. So, I mean, his class is there for all to see. So, in my opinion, you should be building your team around players like him. And, yeah, you've got to get, you know, all the elements behind him correct. But I understand people's frustrations with Lukaku, but I think it's easy to say, you know, you should be chasing those dead balls or chasing the right back and the left back down, you know, like Marcus Bent or Andy Johnson did. But when you get a player that does that, you lose a little bit. And I think what we get in Lukaku, you know, we can afford to lose, but it's up to the manager to address that pressing from behind Lukaku, and it's up to the rest of the players to pick up that sort of. Yeah,
and he did it, didn't he? What, yeah. But Lukaku started it last night, because what you're seeing as well is that Valencia was doing it and it inspired Lukaku to start doing it, but they were doing it in packs, so they were winning the ball back. There's no point. Lukaku, I know people say he's lazy at time, and you look at him and think you should be doing more run, but he probably thinks to himself, well, if I'm running to the fullback, then I'm going to run to the other fullback, and then I run to the. It is actually pointless at times. That's why you need more body.
And when you've got one up front, because if you go to the right back, and then the right back gets rid of the ball, and a mistake's made in a central area, your striker's out of position then. So positionally,
and the other thing about that as well is how deep at times we can be. Lukaku can be 20 yards ahead of the rest of the team, and Valencia was almost a link player between him and the midfield last night, and it made it all a little bit closer. And there was times when the crowd was saying, you know, and Lukaku was saying it as well, get up the pitch, start helping me out, start pressing higher up the field, stop worrying. And it's what Ronald Koeman's been saying. We look nervous as time, like, he can't really affect that. We look nervous. We're not prepared to go higher up.
This
the pitch.
Is not a new problem for us. The fact that Lukaku is so far apart from the midfield. We had this problem when we had Saha playing up front. And I distinctly remember games when Saha had to come so deep to pick up the ball. When he got the ball, and he was great on the ball, Saha, when he turned round to distribute it, there was no one further upfield than him. Mm. He'd come so far deep. You know, he sort of had a negative impact on the breakdown, and it can work against you.
It's about having trust with your teammates as well, isn't it? You know, if you're Lukaku and you've got Delafeu and Morales playing either side, you're on the wings, you're not going to go chasing the ball, because if you're playing against a team who are anywhere near proficient on the ball at the back, they're just going to knock it round you and you're going to be well out of position. Whereas if you've got Valencia then on one side, Lennon on the other, and you know that they're going to, you know, because if you're going to press, you've got to press as a team, haven't you? You can't just be one man. You know, there's that clip famous last season of Aaron Lennon running around and United just knock it round him. And it's like, Everton don't know how to press. But last night, he seems to have more confidence in the lads behind him. And, you know, you've got legs in there with McCarthy and Gay then, and Ross Barkley was doing it as well. So it's about building that trust. And if you're going to press, like, you know, like the top teams do, it's quite a brave tactic, because if you don't do it right, you can get cut open pretty easy, especially against a team like Arsenal as well. But it seemed that everybody had that kind of belief in one another to do it last night, and there was a cohesion about the way we went about it, because although Arsenal had chances in the game, I can't really remember Ozil picking the ball up on the half turn in their half. I can't remember Xhaka bringing too many passes into long positions, or Sanchez finding too much space. They did it really well, and while later on in the game we had to sit back and soak up a bit of pressure, you'd expect that, but We disrupted them really well last night. It's something that not many teams have been able to do so far this season against Arsenal.
We touched on it a bit off air as well, and basically what we were saying was that if you look at that team, if you're taking McCarthy out and stuck Barry in, would you have got that level of intensity from the midfield? Would you have got the same result? And I'd probably argue no, to be honest with you, because I thought McCarthy was so key. We've given him loads of flack. Yeah, so this is the opportunity to give credit where it's due. In this sense, we're giving him loads of flack, and I thought he delivered a really key performance in there. He was so important to what Everton were trying to do off the ball, but we also saw a bit more from him on it too, in terms of him running forward direct. I think if he plays as the last man in that midfield, the holding midfielder, then it stifles him a bit. He's so much more mobile than players that typically play in that position, and he should just be allowed to go out and get in the opposition's faces, shouldn't he, really?
Yeah. I think the balance of that midfield is brilliant. It worked really well, and we've been saying for a while how we need to kind of move on in there, and that blend worked really well. And I think playing, like as you said, Pedro, as a flat three with Ross as kind of a box-to-box player rather than a number 10, who's someone who's really close to Lukaku, it worked, and they hunted the ball in packs. They moved it well quickly, and I think Idrissa Gueye's performance kind of gone a little bit under the radar among some of our fans because of the standards he set.
Because he's so consistent.
But you know, looking on Twitter after the game, and you follow other fans from other teams, don't you? And they were marvelling at how good he was. And I believe he only got a six in one of the newspapers today, which is pretty remarkable. But
he only got a six.
He's incredible, that lad. The standards he sets week after week are just fantastic. When you look at the money that's been spent in the summer, and you said Everton picked him up for 7 million, it's great credit to the recruitment team we've got.
Interesting as well, I think there was a stat saying that's the most Everton have run at home this season. So it goes to show, you know, if you put, you get your rewards if you put the effort in. I know they couldn't have run much less than the but
I think the fans felt it as well, didn't they, coming out of there?
Yeah.
Certainly the last day. The last minute
was absolutely incredible. I mean, how they didn't score, but how we didn't score.
No.
It's just ridiculous how we didn't score. If I'd been wrong, I would have just smashed it.
Yeah.
You know, be selfish and just smash it in. But how that minute, that was one of the maddest sequences of football I've ever seen in my life. And for once, we got our just reward.
It's just one of them, wasn't it? Like a sit at the Gladys Street and you're just waiting for the net to go at the other end. Yeah. You'd see the ball bobbling around.
You get that bit of silence. Like, did it
go
in?
Everyone takes a deep breath, But it was pretty remarkable. And I think it was a good decision by Koeman to bring Calvert-Lewin, although he did skew the ball a little bit before that. But it sort of gave everyone another lift, didn't it? Mm. I think, you know, the fans were up again. You know, having someone young on there, he puts himself about. He was pretty good in the air. I think that kind of just gave the team and gave the fans another little boost that we needed going into those last 10 minutes.
I thought he played his part as well, didn't he? Because if you look at the second goal, he takes a few Arsenal defenders away from Williams. Williams comes in behind him and obviously scores the goal. So it was a fantastic.
It also hit him on the shoulder and went out for a goal.
Initially it wasn't a corner. Wenger had a point, didn't he?
It was nice to see a score not only from a set piece but from a cross as well for the first goal. It was, you know, and for Ashley Williams as well. You know, he's been pretty consistent most of the season. He had a bit of a bad patch in the last couple of games, and obviously, you know, the goal that they scored was practically an own goal. The way he went to kick it with one leg and it hit him on the other leg, and how he managed to get his feet all wrong, I don't know. But it was nice to see him get a goal, and the passion he showed when he did score was fun. And the passion, obviously, you know, Seamus Coleman showed when he scored. But it just makes me laugh when players do run away like that with the hands, you know, cupped to the crowd and say, "There you go, hang on, you've been rubbish all season, lad. Don't be covering it to us. Just do your job," which he did. So that's fair enough.
Yeah, he was. It was interesting, that, wasn't it? But it just showed, I think, how much it means to someone like him, because I don't know if it came through on the television, but after he scored, he came down to the Gladys Street, didn't he, as well, and was giving it loads and trying to get the fans up. So, and the fans responded to that. It was and it was good to see a show a little bit of needle going in at half time, wasn't it, with Duncan Ferguson trying to calm everything down, which is probably the most unlikely peacemaker ever. So that was good as well. But yeah, it was just a brilliant night, and like I said in the first part, it's been a while since we've had a great moment like that at the Gladys Street end, and you know, a late goal against a big team. So it should be it's a huge boost going into Monday's game, and you know, suddenly you see everyone on social media today speaking to people coming out the ground. It's everyone's looking forward to that game all of a sudden, whereas, you know, coming out of the game on Saturday, I felt so hopeless about these matches coming up.
What a difference 24 hours makes, isn't it?
But that's going to be the standard now, though, hasn't it? You know, they've shown they can do that now, and you know, it's frustrating in a way, because you look back to games against Swansea, you look back to other games, you know, like Burnley and Bournemouth away, and you think, where was that intensity then? So they've got to maintain that level now and only get better from it.
It's mad, isn't it, that, you know, the stat coming out afterwards was that Everton have got more points from being, you know, losing positions this season. You think how did it all come from? But we have, and I suppose that shows some kind of resolve and spirit, and that we've got something in the tank.
It's crazy after the sort of run we've been on. We were ninth before the game yesterday. I haven't seen the league table since
seventh. Yeah.
Seventh at the moment, and you know, you still talk about. I mean, now in December you talk about European places, but. you're still in touching distance.
The weird thing is, as well, suddenly the fixtures don't seem so bad. You look at it and go, we get someone at the Derby, and then Leicester, they're not playing that well, and then Hull, they're rubbish. And suddenly you go, we get 9 points there.
See, the way you've made your mistake there is talk about getting something out the Derby. If there's anything I've learned about the Derby is you can't predict anything.
We certainly won't. But let's just move on from last night's fantastic performance. There's been plenty of rumours around the last 24 hours about possible signings. This is what we spoke about this last week in all the negatives that were going on. We were saying how important January was and how important we had to get players in. There's a lot of rumours. Snydlin, if you listen to some reports, and actually in very credible sources, are saying it's very close to being done for, I mean, don't quote me on this, but they're saying Man United, the confidence of week, getting somewhere near 24 million they paid for him. Is that a player, you know, we'd all be happy to see come in.
Yeah, I think it's rare to get a consensus, an overwhelming consensus in favour of one player coming to Everton. Even if Idrissa Gueye over the summer, I saw some people batting eyelids about that particular signing. But with this one, I've not seen anybody say anything negative about the potential signing of Schneiderlin.
That's because they've been watching our midfield.
Well, Schneiderlin or Tom Cleverley, isn't it? That's the question. I think Everton fans would obviously go for Schneiderlin.
Do you know what the answer to that is, don't you? Tom Davies.
That's your answer for everything.
Everything is Tom Davies.
I completely agree with Paddy. I'd be delighted if we got Schneiderlin. He's had a pretty rough time at United, but you get some players, don't you, when they make that step up to a juggernaut of a team, they just can't quite cut it and they struggle a little bit, but he's proven.
Playing under different managers as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But you'd look at him, wouldn't you, though, Ped, and say, he's a Mourinho player. You know, he's got brains and brawn. He's got that energy as well that he usually likes. So it's interesting that it's not worked out there. But when he was at Southampton under Koeman, he was one of the best midfield players in the Premier League. Still 27, you know, wouldn't have to move. He'd still be settled. Worked under a manager he's had before. And I think looking at Gareth Barry as well and trying to get a long-term successor for him, he could potentially do that job because I think he's got a little bit of everything like Barry had in his heyday.
I've been a big fan of Schneiderlin and I'd really look forward to seeing him sign. In fact, he's someone that I said in the summer that I wanted us to go after because he was clearly out of favour. But I just wonder that the style of midfielder that he is, is that a priority? Personally, I'd rather see a more creative attacking midfielder come in. Someone that could link the midfield.
To be honest, I think we should be past the days of priorities. I think it should be if there's a good player, we go and sign him. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but I think he shouldn't be coming in on his own. Though he should be coming in with a couple more. And obviously, there's talk of Depay as well, possibly on. It sounds like it could be a loan now for the end of the season to see if it, you know, it fits. There's the lad from
Charlton, is it?
What? Yeah, go on. What's his name?
Adamola Luckman.
Who's a winger, who very high promising winger. Apparently, Charlton want to take him back on loan, but Everton want to put him straight into the squad. And there's the lad from Russia as well,
Jigoyev. Alan Jigoyev.
We've had a massive
great
success buying from Russia.
Great pronunciation from Paddy there, yeah.
You know, that Russian YouTube channel that we seem to use to buy all our players from Russia is in demand again.
Do you know what? I think Jigoyev, as Paddy expertly said then, I think he's a different calibre, though, isn't he? Because he's proven at major tournaments, he's proven in the Champions League that he's done it before. So I think he wouldn't be in the same kind of bracket as the likes of Nias. You're looking at a player that's done it at the top level.
I think the thing is, though, I mean, it's all on good talk about it, but we do need, you know, these players in. And if anything, I know, obviously, last night's result, fantastic result aside, if we've learnt anything over the last couple of games, it is that in certain areas we are short. We do need a goalkeeper. Mm. We do need a centre-half. Yeah. Obviously,
We need a spine, effectively.
We need someone up front that can fill in for Lukaku when he's not on the boil, if he's having a bad game, suspended, heaven forbid, injured for a long period of time. But essentially, we need 4 or 5 players, and January is not the best time to go out and get them. But we missed our opportunity in the summer, so we've got to do business. And is Schneiderlin worth 24 million? Are these players worth what the money that's being touted? Probably not. But that's the market.
To be fair,
that we're operating
Man United paid 24 in the summer before it went mad. So, you know, if we'd bought him this summer from South, he would be about a £50 million player now, probably, the way it's all gone.
I suppose you've got to consider Balassi's injury. You know, he's going to be out for probably the season, is it? With his knee injury.
It's not
I'd say
2018.
Well, I don't think you'll see him until 2018. Honestly, I don't think you'll see him until 2018. But you know, that's gone now. We forget about that. There's no, you know, we just need to replace. Almost need to replace him like he's not, doesn't play for us.
Well, that's exactly what you need
to
do.
That's what you just have to do. And I hope that he comes back and then becomes another player in the squad. But if they do make those changes, then again, I think they have to be made first week of of January.
But the promising thing is, Ped, that it does seem as though some of these deals are close to completion, doesn't it? And like you say, there are, even in spite of last night's result, there's still scope for massive improvements in the Everton squad, and that needs to come as soon in the window as possible. So if we can get a few in around January the 1st, then we should be flying.
As much as Skyle hater, transfer deadline day activity at Goodison. Yeah. It's got to be done.
Could be transfer opening day. Yeah. You can have like one there when Everton bring all these players in on January the 1st, hopefully, yeah.
Right, that's positivity over. We're talking about the derby next. Coming up in part three, we'll be looking forward to Monday night's Merseyside derby. We'll be right back.
The fans, the team, the gossip, the results. You're listening to The Blue Room on Radio City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to The Blue Room. It is the final part. Radio City Talk with me, Peter McPartland. Simon Magna, Paddy Boylan, Matt Jones in the studio. We are talking about the Merseyside derby. We've been very, very positive up to now on the show. That's all going out the window. And
is it though?
Trust me, it's very high up here to throw things out the window.
You're not feeling positive then still?
I don't know. Do you know what? It's a Merseyside derby. Anything could happen. And to be fair, I'm a lot more positive about it than I was 24 hours ago. Yeah. And also, it's another night game. It's Goodison Park. As fans, I think we just have to continue where we left off against Arsenal, and hopefully the players do the same thing.
I think if you believed in football gods, and if you were to make some sort of ritual offering to them,
this is going. Yeah.
Well, last night would have been the perfect sort of offering.
No, I just offered the ass.
Well,
they probably give us a bath.
But I mean, last night would have been the perfect kind of omen going into. You couldn't have asked for a better result, a better performance. But no, I'm not positive going into Monday night. In fact, I hate derbies, and it's just that unknown factor about it. And form goes out the window, and you know what? All I want out of the derby is just a bit of fight, because there's so often I've seen poor Liverpool teams come to Goodison. And I'm not saying this team's poor, they're quite well, a good team, well drilled. They've got the soft spots that we can definitely go for and exploit. But the amount of times, excuse me, the last couple of seasons that they've had poor teams come to Goodison, and you know, we've just rolled over and let our bellies be tickled by them, and it's, you know, out of Koeman, that's what I want to see, a bit of fight, a bit of grit, get in the faces, make them know that they're in a game, let them know that they're in a competition, and get at them. And you know, if that's what we do and we get beat, so be it. But I'll still be gutted, but you know, at least we can have a bit of pride, say, you know, we put on a good show. I'm not being funny, sorry, Matt.
Pride means nothing when you've got those in-laws.
I'd want to win dirty as well, you know. I'd love to get absolutely battered all game and then sneak a 1-0 victory. But you know, just a little bit of fight will do me.
I think if this game was being played a month ago, I would have been terrified going into it, because you know, you think back to the way they were playing, and you know, when they beat, I think it was Watford 6-1, was it? And you're watching that, and you know, as much as you don't want to admit, you're thinking, you know, Liverpool look a scary proposition at the moment, and that back then you'd say they were probably looking like favourites for the title. But admittedly, we're recording this before they play Borough tonight, and they inevitably go up there and win 5 or 6-0. But they seem as though they've lost a little bit of momentum in the last few weeks, don't they? I think Coutinho is obviously a huge miss for them. Not having Sturridge come off the bench as well has been a big blow.
I think not having Matip as well.
But he's back now, isn't he?
I'm saying it, you know. But that's not. It might have been rushed back, I don't know. Yeah. But they still look a little bit dodgy in the back four.
But I think the other thing I've noticed about them as well is that they tend to be prone to a little bit of a collapse. I think there's been a few times this season when they conceded one goal and conceded one or two straight after that as well. You know, that Bournemouth game was the perfect example, wasn't it? And I think Liverpool tend to play in like waves of emotion, don't they? They have these spells where they're incredible going forward, and they put the passing patterns together and they look great. But there's other times as well where they struggle to get a grip of the game. And you've seen that at Bournemouth. I don't think they've got a player in midfield who can just, you know, get his foot on the ball and slow things down. It's all very frantic. So I think Everton needs to be a little bit cuter than they were last night in the way they used the ball. Maybe try and take the sting out of it at times and not have it, you know, full throttle for the whole 90 minutes. But if they set the same standards as they did last night, I think Everton have got a good chance of winning this game.
Their mini crisis, I think, stems from the goalkeeper. And what I mean by that is, I think if you've got a panicky, dodgy keeper, then it transmits fear to the rest of the defence. We know what that's like, don't we, as Evertonians over the last few years. And as Matt said, if this game had been played a month ago, I would have been really fearful that we'd have been turned over quite comprehensively. But now everything seems to have changed. Our win last night seems to have pointed the way forward, if you like. And they don't quite seem to be clicking in the attacking third without Coutinho. So there's definite scope for Everton to trouble them at the back, and they seem to have a weakness from set pieces as well. Given the fact that we scored two goals from crosses, can you believe Everton scored two goals from crosses? Then maybe there is a chance that we could get something out of it after all.
I think what's important is that I think it's weird. Ronald Koeman's body language has been very weird in the last few weeks. It's almost like he's been standing back and just watching. And assessing everything, which from our point of view is not great, because like he said last week, there's no point waiting till January. You've got to start the season, you know, you've got to get going. These players have got to start playing. But it's almost like he's been standing back, watching and waiting, and then he had a bit of a kickoff after Watford. Again, not like, you know, shouting his mouth off, but basically saying, pointing out the weaknesses and saying, this is what we've got to work on. I think after last night, I think now he's got a performance that he can point to and say, that is your benchmark. You can't be dropping under there now. Because for the whole of the season up to last night, we hadn't had one good game of football. I don't care what anyone says. We hadn't played well in one game. We played in little moments. But last night for, you know, what was it? 65 minutes, we were pretty good. And I think now he can say to his players, that's the way I want you to play football. You've just played it. And and that's it from now on. Whereas if you looked at all the other games, the players would have been scratching their heads going, well, we haven't played any kind of foot in any kind of way this season. So I think now he can just say to them, that's how I want you to play. And if you don't do it, then I was going to say you can make changes, but he makes changes anyway. But you more likely you'd be out the door.
I think the fact that it's another night game at Goodison as well plays into our hands, because that if you like was key last night, wasn't it? Goodison's a different proposition for whatever reason under the lights, and it seemed to frighten Arsenal that kind of soft centre seemed to emerge again, didn't it? They were weak in the air, and Everton pressurised them, and they kind of wilted. Now I'm not suggesting Liverpool will do that, but that it does at least give us reason to be positive.
I think he's got quite a good record against the top teams as a manager, Koeman, hasn't he, as well? He mentioned last night, didn't he, in the press conference, it's the third time he's beaten Wenger. They obviously beat Liverpool at home last season as well, Southampton. They beat Manchester City pretty comprehensively. So I think in the main, and you know, perhaps the Chelsea game aside, obviously this year, but against the top sides, he's set us up pretty well so far. Against Tottenham, we got a result. Against City, we got a result. Against United, got a result. We won last night, so he seems to have a knack of getting Everton through these games, and perhaps as well that the players themselves tend to relish these games a little bit more. I know we've talked about Everton bottling it in derbies down the years, but perhaps that, you know, this new crop of some new faces in there might invigorate them a little bit, and you know, that maybe be a little bit fearless, a bit more fearless, because there's a lot of players in that squad who've been scarred, haven't they, by derby games in the past, and you know, they might not have the right mentality, but these new players coming in and a new manager on the sidelines who, you know, maybe not might not get as wrapped up in this sort of thing.
He doesn't get wrapped up, but that could be a positive, that's a good thing. He doesn't get caught up in the emotion. You know, I was listening to someone the other day, he said, you know, he played for all three teams and managed all big three teams in Holland, and he doesn't have these associations apart from Barcelona. He doesn't get caught up. And now, some people say that's a bad thing, but I think for us, what we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, our managers tend to get caught up in it all, and it gets the better of them. So maybe we need a cool head on Monday night who will just look at the game objectively and say, and I think this is an important thing, what I want you to do tonight is protect that home record. Because that's something we've got. That's something we've got. We're unbeaten at home this season. That's something we've got to protect. Go and protect it and try and get the 3 points.
His status in the game... Sorry. His status in the game dictates that he's not going to be overawed by Liverpool. For me, that's the be-all and end-all of it. And with that in mind, I think that we can actually approach it really positively. Because it's a fresh outlook, as Matt said, that the hangover from the Moyes years where we just went there and lost, it didn't matter who played. They could have Kyriakos and Jay Spearing. We'd have Arteta and Kane, and we'd still somehow contrive to lose the game. That hangover from the Moyes years and some of those players, the likes of Jagielka, who of course will be absent, that shouldn't be there anymore, should it really?
I think that's correct. Koeman's reputation as a player, you know, he's played in some of the biggest games in football. He's played in El Clasico. He's had, you know, some of the big derbies in Holland, which are, you know, tasty games of football, no matter what the standard of football that league produces. But he will get, you know, I hope he'll get what a derby means to Evertonians and what it means to the football club. And I think what we've missed, the opinion that sort of Everton have had over previous years is that almost of, you know, looking up to our big neighbours across the park and, you know, being a bit scared going into the games. And it was Moyes that was saying, you know, taking knives into a gunfight, which is, you know, it's been used to bash Moyes, but that's the attitude that Everton have had in God knows how long, how many years, as long as I can remember. And that's the attitude that we need to get rid of. And it's going to be longer than you know, 6 months that Koeman's been in charge. But it needs to start somewhere, and it needs to start on Monday night.
It can be changed quickly with a win, though, can't it? Exactly. You know what I mean? We're talking now about, you know, if we'd done the show on Monday, we would have been so downbeat about these two games. But I think having that edge in a derby game, you know, I think the example I can think of is Sunderland against Newcastle. Yeah. I think Newcastle Sunderland haven't won for years and years, had they? But now, was it six in a row they've won or something like that? Often all it takes is just that one result to turn it, and the mentality can shift
away. That opinion that, you know, these teams, and it's not just Liverpool, it is the bigger teams in the league, these teams aren't these, you know, immortal, untouchables. You know, we can go and have a go, and we proved it last night. We have proved it against, you know, the United, and go and have a go, and they can be beat.
Joe Royal had it. I mean, he was lucky in a way, because his first game was a derby and he beat them, and it was out the window straight away, and he had it. And I don't even know if Joe Royal was ever beaten as a manager against Liverpool, and he always seemed to have to sign over them. And over in the 90s, when we were rubbish, we won a lot of derbies. And you're right, it's a mentality thing. It's almost like, I remember going into derbies in the 90s and we were a poor side, but I was like, we'll do these tonight. Yeah. It'll be brawn over brains. And I think what's actually changed in the last few years is, as fans, we don't believe we're going to win derbies. No. We've got the mental block just as much as the players, and that filters into the players when we're in the game. So I think,
and it emboldens the opposition, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and I think that's half the problem. But it's chicken and egg thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, you can't go into Goodison on Monday thinking, "Oh, we're going to batter the East tonight." And then, well, if you get beat, then suddenly it makes you 10 times. You're almost preparing yourself, aren't you, mentally, for a defeat? So that's what it feels like we've been doing for the last few years. So maybe for the mentality to change, it has to change all over the club, because players come and go, we're always going to be there.
Everyone plays the part, and that I think that's been one of the things with the atmosphere at Goodison, and a lot of people are seeing on Facebook and Twitter last night saying, you know, that's what we've been asking for, and if the players give a little, the fans will give back, and I totally get on board with that. And that's and especially after some of the performances this season and certainly last season, but everyone, like I say, everyone has their own part to play, and the fans do as well. And I don't think there'll be any questions whatsoever about the atmosphere on Monday night. I think everyone will be right up for it, and we all have our sort of nerves now and question marks over whether or not, you know, we'll get a result or whatever. But come 8 o'clock on Monday night or whatever time kickoff is, you know, every Evertonian that steps through those gates will be well up for it, because we know every Liverpoolian will be.
Just finally, a lot of those players should be embarrassed by the way they played in that Anfield game last season, with Klopp laughing on the sidelines. Yeah. You don't need any more emotion than that, do you?
I'm just hoping that Sky bring the sumo wrestlers You're too young, aren't you? Like,
oh, I think I remember this.
Monday Night Football, first season, Everton versus Liverpool, Mayside Derby, half time, they had sumo wrestlers fighting each other. It was amazing. We won 2-1. Mo Johnson and Peter
I think I've seen that clip.
Scored 7th of December. I remember it well.
I take the result, but I'd rather Sky brought some food for our food bank rather than wrestlers.
He'll get you and Dave Downey pets.
I can't really argue with them. What?
You and Dave could do the wrestling. Get on at half time.
Dave's in Vegas. Anyway, that's enough from us. We'll be back next week, hopefully even more positive than we've been this week. If that ain't possible, well, it will be. If we win, it will be possible, right? See you then.
This is the Blue Room. 1 hour, everything Everton.
Radio City Talk.